Here's the record. Okay, try that again. Okay, so instead of lab group, I thought I would give a tutorial for those of you who are interested in how Naive Bayes integration works and have how you guys can actually do it yourself using Excel. When I do it, I write a computer program to do it, but when I say Naive Bayes, a lot of people are like, oh, that's magic. I could never do it. And in fact, it's incredibly simple. There are a lot of tools I use that are complicated, but this is not one of them. So I thought by doing it, having you guys do it yourselves in Excel, you'll see there's no magic. And I think it could be super useful. So, my screen seems to be frozen. Okay, so I thought I'd start out with a motivational example, which is from Minsu's research. So Minsu is trying to do make a Mitocarta for Arabidopsis. And as you all know, Arabidopsis is this great model organism, and there's been a ton of research already done. And so Minsu is going to do affinity, like pull down the mitochondria with an affinity tag and then do proteomics. There are several papers that have already done that. One question is, which paper is the best? What protocol should he start out with that he then modifies? And secondly, is it even worth doing Mitocarta in Arabidopsis? Is there already an atlas that's so good that it's not worth us doing? So in the literature, there already are a whole bunch of papers that do mitoproteomics. So they isolate mitochondria and they come up with different numbers of proteins. So you might want to say, which is the best protocol, and then I can start there for my own work. So I'm going to show you how to create a curve, something like this. I downloaded the data from the supplements of each of these papers. I used training data to say how well they work at a variety of thresholds. And then you can very easily see there are a bunch of papers that are the best. And this curve we'll go through in more detail. But basically, you want to be up here in the curve. Perfect sensitivity, find all the known mitochondrial proteins with no false positives. Precision is one minus the false discovery rate. So you want to be up here. The best we can get is somewhere around here. You get about half of all the known proteins, but about 40% of what you find is not mitochondrial. So I will go through how to create this, but the conclusions that Minsu and I came to by looking at this is that these are the papers that you want to look at their methods. This other paper that also does affinity purification, it's clearly not as good as this one. And so I think this is an example of how this technique can be useful for you guys. And again, I'm doing this tutorial for you, so totally interrupt me, ask questions. This is for you. So does that make sense for motivation? Good. Okay, so here I'm gonna go through some slides on how I actually do this log odds score and create these ROC curves. So that will be slides, and then we'll switch to Excel where we'll work through the math. All right, so way back when I started in the lab, I built human mitocarta 1.0. The heart of it was proteomics, where we isolated mitochondria from 14 tissues. Did proteomics. The proteomics by themselves have a lot of co-purifying contaminants. The mitochondria is attached to the ER, it's attached to the peroxisome. So when you pull down mitochondria and do proteomics, you get a lot of other things. So we had to combine it with all these other methods using Bayesian integration, which I'll go through now. So it sounds complicated. It's a principled method to combine data sets where you score each data set by its accuracy on training data. That's it. It's very simple. So how do we do this? There are four steps. First is you come up with training data of known mitochondrial proteins. We will call that gold plus, and known non-mitochondrial proteins, gold minus. Then we compile what are called in machine learning features, our data sets that might give clues into mitolocalization. Then we score each feature by its accuracy on our training data, and then you combine the scores. So how do we come up with our training data? For Mitocarta, we went through the literature originally back in 2008, and we excluded mitochondrial proteins determined just based on proteomics because we want to have independent data to evaluate our proteomics data. We also looked for proteins that were known to go to other compartments in the cell. So this was pretty time consuming. Minsu and I just did this for Arabidopsis. It took probably 40, 50 hours of combing the literature, but it's really helpful for if you have good starting data, you're going to get up good fundamental data at the end. Second are what are the features that can give us clues as to mito localization? I'm not going to go through all of these, but basically the mass spec from the 14 tissues, homology to a known mitochondrial protein in yeast. Is your protein co-expressed with known mitochondrial proteins across a mouse tissue atlas? Does it have a protein domain that across evolution tends to be only found in mitochondrial proteins? Does it have a targeting signal predicted by this program target P? Does it have homology to this bacteria Rickettsia, which is thought to be similar to the original endosymbiont? And in an experimental data set where you turn on mitobiogenesis, is the mitochondrial is the transcript upregulated? So each of these is basically a column in an Excel file. You have all the proteins, and then you'll have one column for each of these features. That makes sense? Okay. So here's the heart of the naive Bayes is scoring each feature based on a log odd score. It's very simple. The log odd score is what's the score for all, given that you're a known mitochondrial protein, what's the probability of the score divided by given that you're a non-mitochondrial protein, what's the score, and then you log that. So we're going to walk through a data set in Excel, which is target P. So what the original target P protein did was predict, does this protein, based on the beginning and terminal protein residues, is it predicted to be in the mitochondrial targeting signal or a signal peptide? If it's mitochondrial, it gives a score of 1 to 5 of its confidence. So the target P could have confidence 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I'll go through how we create this. But basically, 175 gold plus proteins are confidence 1. That's a sensitivity of 18%. We have a false discovery rate of 15%, which I'll talk about, and that gives a log odd. Well, I didn't show the this bottom here, but we'll calculate that. That gives a log odd score. So you can do that for each of the target P confidence, and if it doesn't predict a mitochondrial targeting signal, and that is the score for that feature for target P. So for every protein you want to score, you look up what its targeting signal prediction is, and then you literally give it a score for each protein. So now we want to combine scores across all the features. And in the naive Bayes, it's unbelievably simple. You just add the scores from the different features. There are different ways you could do it. You could do voting, you could do different things. What the naive Bayes is you create the log odd score and you add them, which has a huge assumption, which is the assumption behind the statistical method is that there's conditional independence of the features. What does that mean? Conditional independence means given a protein is mitochondrial, your detection in one feature, say detection by mass spec, is independent of your having a yeast homolog or independent of having a mito targeting signal. Now, of course, these things will all be correlated with each other, but if you're already mitochondrial, these things should be fairly independent from each other. And that is an assumption of naive Bayes. It's not always going to be true. So most of the work I did in building MitoCarta was coming up with scores here that were the most conditionally independent as possible. And this is what, oh, and here's how you would do it. So you would get the scores for all of these and you would add them together. And here is the actual conditional independence of the features. So given that you're gold plus, how correlated are these features? So there is some correlation, but it's pretty modest. The most correlation here is between having a yeast mitochondrial homolog and a mitochondrial domain that's mitochondrial, but most of them are fairly low. And if you're looking just at gold minus, there's no correlation or very little correlation here. So because these are low, we can use naive Bayes, which is just you give a score and you add them up. Make sense?
Sarah, how do you handle conditional or continuous versus, these binned variables that you have there?
Great question, John. So the way that I handle continuous variables is to bin them. And I'll show you that with target P. So we're going to do target P, which is I'm not not a continuous variable, but then I'm also going to have you guys do target P2.0, which gives a score from 0 to 100. And how I handle that is just put the score into bins, and then just do this. So there are some other ways one could do that with modeling, but this is the most simple way. Does that make sense? Okay, so that's the heart of naive Bayes. There's nothing more to it. Really that simple. So simple, we can do it in Excel in about 5 minutes or 10 minutes. And then we take this matrix and we come up with these key parameters of accuracy. And they sound very similar to each other, but they're actually quite different. And this is, I think, one of the most important slide here, is this is a 2x2 matrix where you have reality here, or what we have from our training data, and what is predicted by any feature. So here would be our gold plus, our positive mitoproteins, and then any method, say target P, say mass spec, does it predict the gold plus? These will be your true positives. These will be your false positives. So they're predicted by the method, but they're wrong. Your false negatives are here, and your true negatives are here. Now, when you go this way, of gold plus, how many are really true by your method? That's your sensitivity. So the percent of known mitochondrial proteins that your method finds, that's the sensitivity. The specificity is of the known non-mitochondrial proteins, how many of them does your method predict to be negative? That's this method here. A lot of papers report sensitivity and specificity, but the metric that I think is far more useful is sensitivity and precision, which is 1 minus the false discovery rate, which is going this direction. Of the things that are predicted positive, how many are actually positive is the precision. And of the things that are predicted positive, how many are false positives? That's the false discovery rate. So I like this plot of sensitivity precision for each of the methods at the different thresholds or like binned scores. What is the sensitivity and precision of that method in a cumulative way? So when you look here, you want to be up here. Get all of gold plus with no gold minus. Mass spec is our best feature. You can see it because it's closest over here. The worst
Sarah?
feature, yep, please.
Sorry, quick question. I remember there being something tricky about false positive rate versus false discovery rate. And I think that is this a false positive rate that you're talking about, or is this a false discovery rate?
I'm using them synonymously, and in the medical field, they use positive predictive value for this precision, and they use other things here. But what's complicated, and I'll go through in the tutorial, is you have to correct if you don't have the right sizes of your gold plus and gold net minus, you have to correct these sizes before you can get your false discovery rate. There may be a real technical difference between false positives and false discovery rates, but I don't know it, so it's a good question. I'll look it up afterwards.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, so our worst features are down here. Is the transcript induced by mitochondrial biogenesis, or does it have a homolog in rickettsia? Those are pretty crappy features. The best is mass spec. Co-expression is here. Target P is here. But when you combine them using naive Bayes, you're getting way better. So at 80% sensitivity, we now have like a 5% false discovery rate, whereas at 80% sensitivity in mass spec, you have a 60% false discovery rate. So that is a huge difference. What most people usually report is sensitivity versus specificity, which looks way better. And I'll go back to why that is. But if you look up here in sensitivity versus specificity at 80% sensitivity, mass spec is looking awesome. So why is this so much different than this? And the answer is back to here. There's so many more things that aren't mitochondrial that if you're just looking at the percent of things, just looking within gold minus, which is 20,000 minus 1,000, so 19,000 things, your method is pretty good at getting the true negatives. So this looks great. But what you really care about as an experimentalist is of the things that it calls true, how many are really true? And because this set is so much bigger than this set, you can get very different precision or false discovery rates versus specificity. So when in a paper you see this, think to yourself, what's the size difference about your true set and your false set to see if this actually is what you want or if this is what you want. So this is a little bit technical and subtle, but I think it's actually quite important. So let me pause there. Any questions on the subtle difference or not so subtle difference? All right, I've been perfectly clear. Okay, before we go
So,
to,
actually, I have a question about like co-expression. That seems like a surprisingly good feature.
Yes.
I was wondering about your thoughts on how, if you were to generate a new co-expression data set, do you have any advice based on what you learned from the Mammalian system here on how to get the optimal co-expression data set?
So I actually don't think it's just a question of how what the optimal data set is. It's how co-expressed are your genes of interest? And it happens to be, if you look at almost any expression data set in mammalian cells or tissues, there are two things, sets of genes that are just beautifully co-regulated at the biological ring. One is OxPhos and one is cholesterol biosynthesis. Those are the two pathways where all the genes and the pathways go together. If you tried this on, almost any other cell compartment, co-expression would not do this well. So if you were trying to use the same method to look at the Golgi or to look at the peroxisome, it just wouldn't work because those genes don't show beautiful co-expression. So I don't know in your species of interest how co-expressed the transcripts are. And they're going to be weird species like trypanosomes where all of the expression is happening not at the RNA level, but later on. And so looking at the RNA would actually tell you nothing. This is a function of biology that mitochondrial genes are just some of the most co-expressed genes out there. Other questions? The original Nitocarta 1 didn't have APEX, so a great question is how good is APEX compared to the other methods? So I just plotted on this how good the published APEX matrix from HEK293 cells and the published APEX IMS and the published APEX MOM is. They're just a single dot rather than a curve because I just have a list. These are the APEX matrix ones, so you can estimate a sensitivity and specificity. So APEX matrix gets 49% sensitivity of all the, and again, it's only going to be labeling the stuff on the inside of the matrix or the matrix facing part of the membrane proteins. Originally, when we did this, there were six false positives based on our literature curation of gold minus, but when we read the literature, those false positives turned out to be actually dual localized proteins, and there is a mitochondrial protein, so the false discovery rate is zero. The IMS has much lower sensitivity of all, but this is sensitivity not of IMS proteins, this is sensitivity of all of mitocarta. So you would expect lower sensitivity because there are not that many IMS proteins, but the IMS can also label membrane proteins, either the outer membrane proteins that are facing in or the inner membrane proteins that are facing out. However, there was much more false positives. So there were only four false positives, but they all really were false positives, which leads to a 16% false discovery rate. And the outer membrane, again, there are not that many proteins, so it has a low sensitivity and a fairly high false discovery rate. So the last slide I have is just to remind you. I showed you what we did in Mitocarta 1.0 in 2008. In Mitocarta 2.0, we added the big changes where we added APEX matrix into Gold Plus, actually, because it was so bad, it was so good. And then we updated all of the features, but that was a fairly minor update. So we got a couple more genes. And then Mitocarta 3.0 is exactly Mitocarta 2.0, but with manual annotation. We kicked some things out, we added stuff in, and we annotated the pathways and the submitochondrial localization. So that's what I have there. And now we'll switch to the tutorial. Any questions before we switch gears? Nope. Okay.
Oh, sorry. I have a quick question.
Please, Owen.
How much do you think that the, because you're assembling this gold positive list through, presumably the literature uses some of these experimental techniques, how does that have an effect on Like, is there some kind of finding the same technique because that's the one that was used to find the protein originally in the literature? Does that
Great
make
question.
sense?
It makes perfect sense. So when we did the literature, we threw out any large-scale studies that like based on proteomics. That would not count. So I can show you our stats from the Arabidopsis, but basically two-thirds of the Arabidopsis proteins were confirmed in the literature by GFP tagging the and microscopy with MitoTracker. So that's going to find proteins that you can express, like it's going to be biased for things that you can express in cell lines that aren't essential, but it shouldn't bias what you can detect by mass spec. Another third were detected by things like you pull down the structure and you do crystallography and you say this is a complex one protein. Again, that's not going to be so biased, but I think that's a real concern. So when we do Gold Plus, that's something we're thinking about, is.
Right, because I guess if you added these apex hits to Gold Plus, then apex would be perfect, right?
Exactly. So we never we y you'll never see an ROC curve that has apex in it because once it's Gold Plus, you can't use that to evaluate the method. So when I showed you that plot on Apex, this is Gold Plus as defined before we did Apex. Right? So this is the original. Does that make sense? Yes. So you really want to avoid that circularity for exactly the reason. So in Arabidopsis, there actually is a great database that predicts the localization of a zillion proteins, including the mitochondria. We didn't use that for our Gold Plus because it includes stuff from large-scale mass spec studies. It includes all sorts of stuff that we didn't trust. So even though that exists, we did our own manual curation, so it didn't have that problem.
Is there a way to integrate that information later in, kind of down the road? It seems like you're kind of wasting that information then if you don't.
Yes, great question. So, in fact, that is in our original thing. We have the mitochondria catalog. We have, in this case, 93 proteins that came from Gold Plus that didn't get predicted by our integration. We included those in our final list because does that make sense?
Okay, I see. So if you say it's Gold Plus, then it's Gold Plus.
It will end up in the final catalog, even if none of the methods pick it up. And then what we did originally is we picked proteins from our predictions, some way high up in the list and some not so good, and then did GFP tagging. However, in retrospect, a lot of these that we said looked great by GFP tagging, we then kicked off in MitoCarta 3.0 because the student who did this way back then, it wasn't confocal microscopy, and some of the images just weren't good enough. And so you could squint and say it was mitochondrial, but it wasn't really. So. Okay. So let's
So
switch now. Yep, please.
one of the questions about the apex. So the underlying data set for the apex involves continuous variables, and you
No.
we
What I so well it could, but what I did is there's the publication in the Ting lab is here is the set of mitocarta apex proteins. And so it was a single thing. Was it found or was it not found? I didn't for this plot, I didn't go back and look at the raw data and try to make a curve. I just took the list as published.
So they drew the line in that original data set in a way that was very
Exactly.
precise.
Well, it was a, I mean, the apex matrix worked pretty well. The apex mom, they had some more data that I didn't then go in and show here, but some of them, I mean, this is just easier to do than these other ones. But yes, so you could say maybe they had more data, but they only picked, they took a very stringent threshold.
I was just wondering, if you're going to publish a data set based only on Apex, you might pick a very precise cutoff. But if you're going to incorporate it into a naive Bayes for an overall mitochondria, there might be value in including a bin that is slightly less confident, but could
So in
be
fact,
appropriately.
we have that in the MitoCarta database. We have like what's the evidence? So we also have like IMS low confidence and MOM low confidence, but that didn't go into the naive Bayes. It's just listed as what some of the evidence is.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah. Okay, so let's switch gears to the sorry, I keep having to move the tutorial. Okay, so let's start with the start.target p. So I thought let's build the ROC curve and the log odd scores for target p just because it's so simple. And then we'll do that all together, or I will show you how to do that. And then if you want to stay longer, you can do it for target p 2.0. And so you can compare how the new version of target p compares to the old version of target p. So what you need to do this is a list of all your genes. In this case, I have 19,248 human genes. I have their training label, which is from Mitocarta 3.0. Is it Gold Plus, which is Mitocarta, or not Mitocarta, or there's some other ones? And then what's the score in target P? And what we want to get to is already here with all the formulas, is what's the log odds score, and to create an ROC curve. So let's actually do that. So how do we create that? And literally, I think it should take about 5 minutes, but it may take longer with questions. So we want to look for how many things are there at confidence score 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and no MTS for gold plus and for gold minus. So an easy way to do that in Excel is let's just pull out the gold plus genes. So if we look here, there are 961 gold plus in this data set. And I'm just going to paste them here. So this, oops, sorry. These are the gold plus, and now we want the target P scores for these gold plus. So this is target P for gold plus. So now this is just the 961 genes, and it has target P scores for them. Now let's look at gold minus, and we only care about gold plus and gold minus, not any other ones. Let's copy this. There are 17,241. I'm going to paste that there. That's target P gold minus. So we have these two things. Now we want to know the number of gold plus that have target P score of 1. Now in Excel, there's a formula for this. If you say equals, it goes into formula mode. You can say count if. How many things in column A are the same as 1? And I'm going to put a dollar to make sure that stays as column D. There are 175 things that are gold plus that have a score of 1. Now, if I just fill this down, this is how many gold plus genes have any all of these scores. Want to do number gold minus? I'm just going to click and drag. Now we have gold minus. So if you look at this formula, count if anything in column B is the same as D2. So does that make sense to people? Okay. Now, a huge thing I didn't talk about is what is our prior odds that something is mitochondrial or not mitochondrial. So in Mitocarta 1.0, I used a paper, kind of an ancient paper based on a 2D gel that counted how many dots there were. They thought there should be 1,500 mitochondrial proteins. And so our prior odd is that there should be 1,500 things in gold plus, and there are about 20,000 human genes. So if we subtract the 1,500, there should be 18,500 in non-mitochondrial things. So that's our prior. And the reason that this is important is this goes back to our this thing. When we're going in this direction, we want to make sure these two sets are the right size from each other. Because originally I only had 600 things here and 2,000 things here doesn't have the right ratio. So we're going to correct the size of these things by our prior odds of how big these sets should be, so that we can create a false discovery rate that's more accurate. Does that make sense to people? This is a subtlety here. So that prior odds is quite important, and it may or may not be perfect, but it's important for correcting our sides of our gold plus and gold minus. So now we can get the sensitivity, which is what percent of all the things that are really gold plus are in this bin. So the sensitivity is going to be this number divided by the total. And I'm going to put a dollar for the 8, so that means we'll always use that 960. So here are the sensitivity of each of these bins by themselves. And for gold minus, exactly the same. So this is going to be this number divided by that number. So this is going to be 1 minus specificity. That makes sense to people? Yep. Okay, so the log odds score, if we go back to the formula, this is percent gold plus, this is percent gold minus, so we're going to take that ratio and take the log 2 value of it. Very simple. So we're going to do log of this divided by this and base 2. We pull that down. So now we have the same score. That's for each bin separately. What would the score be? So if we want to combine this with other data, we look up what the value is, and then we're going to add the target P to the mass spec score. To create the ROC, we don't actually use this at all. We're going to create something else for the ROC, but this is what we would use for the Mitocarta integration. So this is saying how much better is confidence 1 versus 2 versus 3 versus 4 versus 5. Make sense? Maybe? Yes. Okay. To create the false discovery rate, we need to correct the size of our true positive and false positive sets based on our prior. So our gold plus is 960. We think it should be 1500. So all we have to do is take what's our sensitivity and multiply it by how many things we think there should be. And I'm going to make that there. So we found 175 things in gold plus, but if gold plus was the right size, we should have found 273 things. So when we do this, these aren't perfect numbers because we're estimating, but if gold plus was 1500, this is how many we would find in each. And if gold minus was 18,500, this is how many we would find in each. And now we can calculate the false discovery rate based on these corrected numbers. So the false discovery rate is the false positives divided by the false positives plus the two positives. So this would be not the false discovery rate, but the corrected false discovery rate. And that's the term we use in our Mitocarta paper. And then we pull this down. So our false discovery rate for confidence 1 is 15%. So 15% of things that have a target P of 1 are going to be wrong. 89% of things that have a target P with confidence 5 are going to be wrong. So this is incredibly helpful to interpret your data. Does that make sense? Yeah? No? If it doesn't, please
have a question,
ask.
Sarah.
Yeah, please.
Oh, so I think I missed the. How did you get the prior?
The prior came from literature. So there's a study that way back in the old days, isolated mitochondria did a 2D gel and then a stain for protein and counted how many dots there were. Of course, this is a huge, like, it's not a very good prior because there are many problems with that method, but it gives you a rough estimate. And in all the papers before Mitocarta, if you looked in any review in a textbook, it would say there are about 1,500 mitochondrial proteins based on that kind of crappy paper.
So how would you get the prior for like an organism like Arabidopsis?
What I did is I literally made it up. So I think we should come up with a better way of doing that. But that's what I've been doing for all of the data sets. Like in Acanthamoeba, I think about how many proteins there should be. But a lot of papers don't have a lot of times this prior isn't very good.
Okay.
Good question.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay. Now the ROC curve that we want.
Sorry.
Yes, please.
Along the same lines, I can understand. Like, I understand how you estimate or kind of get an educated guess for the gold positive prior. How about the gold negative prior?
Yeah, good, great question. The gold negative prior is everything that's not Mitocarta. So, at the time I did the study, there were thought to be 20,000 human genes. So all of them minus that will be our true negative set.
So you would have it like expressed human genes minus what do you think it's a real gold positive?
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep.
Oops, sorry.
Sarah? Yep.
Yeah, quick question. How do you deal with like nuclear paralogs? Like for instance, like if you have like a polymerase that is found in mitochondria but also in the nucleus, like you would imagine that some of the like the yeast homolog might like pick that up accidentally. Like do you purposely exclude those from the training or are they just marked as gold minus and then put in as is?
So it depends. Different people. So I'm giving you example for MitaCarta. Different studies that use naive Bayes handled this differently. So when you're defining your gold minus, you could be really sure that these proteins are totally are not dual localized. That they're just you really know where they go. Even if it was a paralog, like Shamit 1 and Shamit 2, you could say Shamit 2 is in the mitochondria, Shamit 1 is in the cytosol, and that could be fine for your gold minus. So sometimes people have very small, carefully curated gold minuses. Other times people use everything else other than their gold plus to put into their gold minus. There are pros and cons of doing the different ways. But in general, I would say you want those things in your training set because that is a problem. That is going to be a problem with the yeast homology, and you want to capture that problem. So I totally would want those complicated cases in my training set so that it captures how crappy yeast homology is for this reason.
Gotcha. Cool. Thanks.
Yep. Okay. Any other questions? All right, so the ROC curve, I show these, but I don't actually go through what they actually mean here. So what this curve means is at different thresholds, how good is your method? So if you picked a threshold that was here, so these are cumulative curve. So you kind of start with your best bin, and then you go to your worst bin, and you say, well, so target P is a good example. Your confidence one is going to be up here, low sensitive but high precision. Here would mean, are you two or higher? Here is three or higher. Here is four or higher. Here is five or higher, and then here is the whole thing. So the ROC curves are inherently cumulative. So that's what we want to create in our Excel tutorial. So the cumulative, so what I do in my program is I take whatever bins there are, and I resort them based on the log odd score. Because you might not know which bin is going to be your best bin. So I literally will sort them based on log odd score. So I always have the best one first and then the second best one. And then I can calculate cumulative true positives. So for bin one, it's always going to be the first thing. Whoops, sorry. Cumulative, so the true positive corrected is going to be for bin one, it's just going to be the same. But for score two, it's going to be whatever was here plus however many you had before. So does that make sense? So what this true positive corrective cumulative means is it's two or more, and false positives is two or better for the score. So if we pull this down, the last one should be our total size. Okay, so now we can do sensitivity and specificity out of the total set. So here we could either put this or we could do it here. Okay, so the sensitivity originally here was 18%, 26%. For each bin, now the sensitivity is one or better, two or better, three or better, four or better, five or better, and anything. And then the same thing for the specificity. And now we can create our ROC curve. Insert, sorry, I have to move my thing. A dot plot with lines. That's not what it's supposed to look like. What am I doing wrong? Oh, sorry. I know what I'm doing wrong. So this should be sensitivity. This currently, what I'm showing you now is one minus specificity, but we actually want specificity. So what I showed here in the formula is the false positives, but what specificity is one minus that. It's how many true negatives you get here. So let's just correct that. And that's what us sensitivity specificity curve looks like. And if we want sensitivity versus precision, We just, okay, now we need false discovery rate and precision. So false discovery rate, now this is easy. It's the false positives out of the false positives plus the true positives. And precision is one minus the that. So, sorry, we'll take that and go to, so this is sensitivity versus precision, which is what I showed you before. So this is target P1.0. It's not called 1.0 because it was just the first one. It didn't have it. But now that we have 2.0, we can compare it 2.0 and 1.0. All right, so that was the tutorial I wanted to show you. And then I'll take questions. And then for what I was thinking is if anyone wants to stay longer, you can start with MitoCarta 2.0, which has these continuous scores that I've pre-binned for you, but I can show you how to bin them. And then you could fill out to complete target P2.0 to see if you can create something like this, but for target P2.0, and you can see how much better or worse MitoCarta target T2.0 is compared to target P1.0. So any questions? I was perfectly clear. All right, so for those of you who want to stay on and do the exercise yourself, take it away. I will stay here for another 15 minutes and you can ask questions. For those of you who've gotten what you want to get out, have a great day.
Thanks, Sarah, that was awesome.
Good.
Yeah, thanks, Sarah.
Yep, thank and you, I'll Sarah. Be here if you want to, so.
Thank you so much, Sarah. This was great.
Good. Glad it was helpful.
For the ones you bind, do you usually bind them on like equal intervals, or do you bind them, for example, with cumulative, like, I don't know, equal amounts of data per bin?
That's a great question. So what I would do here, I'll share my screen again to answer questions. So literally, this is what I did back when I was, so I just take the scores, let's just sort them based on score. I look at what the distribution looks like and then pick bins that make sense. Mm-hmm. So I would literally just, okay, so here are all 20,000 genes, and it's kind of hard to see because most of them are zero, the score is zero, but the other ones have a score from like 1 to 50-ish. There are actually a couple, you can't see them here, that are like 40-something. But depending on what the distribution like looks like, you can try different bins depending on that. And the way that you... Well, it may matter, but you can try different things. So what I did, so once you sort it, you could literally just put a name of a bin and then go down to the next bin and put a new name in. So I did that for you, but there's no reason you couldn't do that in Excel yourself, however you want to bin them. And there are other ways you could do with more exciting formulas, but I just wanted to make it easy.
Does it matter what the size of the bin is? Like how fine the bin is?
Yes. So if you make them too small, you don't have enough training data in your bin and the results will be really crappy. So you want the bins big enough to have reasonable data. So I didn't make, for this, I didn't make the bins equal sizes because there were just so few things between 0.4 and 0.5. I just lumped that in to 0.6. You want enough to give some granularity, but if not too many to have not small training data.
Gotcha.
Thank you, Sarah.
Yes.
Can you share the recording and your PowerPoint slides?
Sure. Let me stop the recording.